Welcome to Apple at Work podcast, all about Apple and the enterprise. My name is Bradley Chambers, your host, as always, back again on the show to finish out our series on some key Apple products is Weldon Dodd from Kanji. Weldon, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Bradley. Great to talk to you again.
So we'll talk about the iPad today, which I think it's unique for me because I was, you know, heavily involved in using the iPad at work from really day one. But before we jump into that, you all had a nice announcement recently about a new integration with ServiceNow. And I think one of the key things you're going to see with Apple at work and particularly how companies that build around Apple and the enterprise is going to be this integration with just the continued integration of the IT stack and really saying, okay, what are the tools do our customers use and how do we best integrate that to make it really work seamlessly, like kind of, you know, locking down or eliminating these data silos. So what's been the driving force behind this ServiceNow integration?
The driving force absolutely is customers. So when we talk to customers that have, you know, larger and more complex IT environments, you're absolutely right. They want to pull all the pieces together and see how they work. So, you know, at Kanji, we're really focused on building a best-in-class Apple device management and Apple device security platform. But there's other parts of the IT stack that are really handled by other partners, other solutions. And ServiceNow is absolutely best in class for IT service automation. And so it creates a bunch of interesting opportunities. Where we've started is asset management. So the device inventory information from Kanji can be shared with ServiceNow, and it's available to workflows that leverage the device information over there. But we're really excited about the future of where this is going to go as well. You know, for us, we really like the idea of a future where in order to get an application installed on your computer, it doesn't mean like a traditional ticket that gets opened up by IT and someone has to go, you know, click into Kanji and assign that app. But instead, there could be a whole service automation flow that runs through ServiceNow that the end result is approval by manager, approval by finance, and that user gets added to an IDP group that's already set up in Kanji to automatically deploy that app and install it on the end user's device. And so now IT is not burdened with additional work to go in and, you know, click through the interface to install that app. It just happens automatically because of that integration that's possible between Kanji, ServiceNow, whatever IDP the customer is using. And that's a feature we're really excited about.
Well, and again, it's this theme of the decade I've been saying where, like, if you build a tool, you need to be thinking and asking your customers, like, what else do you use? And, like, how can we best, again, seamless automation? So many of these things, trying to think of a way to say this nicely. So often when different vendors are black boxes that just don't talk to anything else, it's not technical. It's just business. And I think companies are figuring out, or they're being forced to by their customers, like, we want everything to be open and transparent and work. So again, like, really cool announcement. Kind of wasn't on my radar. So, you know, this ServiceNow integration, what even thinking, oh, that wasn't even thinking about the possibilities there. But again, it's all about going to your customers and thinking, like, and asking, what else do you use? How can we best sync this data across? How can we best, like, you know, make this just work in the background. So that's really, really cool, exciting. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes. Again, just big win for Apple, you know, fleets, I think. I mean, that's the big thing. And the more of these integrations we see, the more this continues to legitimize Apple as like a dominant endpoint in the enterprise and a dominant platform to build around. So congrats to that. But today we want to talk about the iPad, and it's a weird product in Apple's history. Like, I don't know 30 years from now how we remember it and where it's at, but it is 14 years old. You know, I remember felt like it was multiple years in the making. So, like, you know, certainly when the iPhone was released, people kept, you know, kind of asking, we would like this tablet. And this was around the time that, you know, netbooks were popular, and I remember in the original introduction, Steve said, like, you, why not build a netbook, and talked about, and netbooks were like the thing. And this was before Chromebooks. You know, netbooks were just really slow Windows computers. They were cheap, slow Windows computers. Yeah. And they just weren't good. And so, and of course, the story that Steve Jobs told multiple times is they they started on the tablet first with multi-touch. And when they got multi-touch right, they realized they could build a phone out of it. So they put the iPad on the shelf and went and built the phone, which was really, obviously, in hindsight, a great decision. And it made it when, so I go, let's come back to this bigger interface. What do you remember about this time period? But you're kind of right when it was leading up to it. What was the demand like, do you think, among customers?
This episode of Apple at Work is sponsored by Mosel. Deploying, managing, and protecting Apple devices at work shouldn't be difficult or require several solutions. Mosel is the only Apple unified platform for business. By combining enhanced device management, endpoint security, internet privacy and security, single sign-on, and enhanced app management into a single Apple-only platform, businesses can now easily and automatically deploy, manage, protect their Apple devices automatically with one solution at an affordable price. With a solution for every business size and the best support in the market, start a free 30-day trial and see firsthand why Mosel is more than an Apple MDM. Mosel is everything you need to work with Apple. To learn more, visit business.mosel.com. That's business.mosyle.com. Thanks to Mosel for sponsoring Apple at Work this week.
I think it was really cautious at first, at least that's my memory, is, you know, certainly the iPhone was already just a smash hit. You know, my recollection is at the end of that first year that the iPhone was out, it was already the number one selling phone. Now, you know, times were different then. There was, you know, 1,000 different feature phones. And so it maybe didn't take as much to be the number one selling device, but it was right away and immediately useful. And the utility was obvious. The thing I remember most was wondering when we heard rumors of it, was wondering, you know, is there a place for this in my life? And how am I going to be able to use it? I listened to Steve Jobs. I'm pretty sure the analogy that he used was that, you know, there's different kinds of cars that people need. And, you know, you need a pickup truck for getting work done and for moving and hauling things around. But a lot of people don't need a pickup truck and just, you know, have a small sedan or commuter car to get from A to B. And that still resonates with me a bit. I think, I imagine maybe there was a spot for it. Over the years, I think what I've imagined it would do for me has changed, right? Turns out there is a place for it in my life, at least, but maybe it's different than what I initially imagined. How about you?
The car truck thing really made sense to me at the time, because I think we had this like vision of where the iPad would go as a creation device. And I think that's, and to remember at this time period, like these phones were still pretty small. So, the smallest iPhone we have today is significantly bigger than the biggest iPhone at the time. Yeah. And so what I feel like happened is the phone got better at doing what the iPad did, better, a lot faster and better than the iPad did at what the Mac did. And again, you know, thinking back to like the Mac was in the, like, this wasn't the best time period for the Mac too. And not necessarily the software side, but the hardware side was kind of rough. And I think a lot of that was just this was probably around the time period when the Intel chips, like I'm pretty sure internally at Apple felt, gosh, they probably had to be beating their head against the wall. Mm-hmm. And so the iPad, I would argue, is still the best consumption device. Like if you're like, I want a device that's not a TV, this is still a fantastic way to watch movies on a plane, to you know, work, you know, kind of just read emails. I always had this vision that would become an easier device to create on over the years. And it's not hardware, but like the interface, the touch interface is still, I find, difficult to use for long periods of time compared to a traditional mouse and keyboard. And at the time, I even thought, this is just my age. As technology evolves, like this new generation will prefer an iPad, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know that that's necessarily come true or not come true, but I thought the iPad would be further along today as a primary computing device for people. And I don't think that's true. I think the Mac is probably at the healthiest place. As we talked on our previous episode, like the Mac is at a much healthier place. And so, and again, I think that's just somewhat limitations of iPad OS, but also the interface. And even as Apple added the keyboard with the trackpad built in, and you can use some of that on iOS, it still feels bolted on a bit. And like, I am still inherently more productive and faster on a Mac than I am on an iPad. Just again, like editing a podcast, I can do that in a fraction of the time you can do it on an iPad, but it just takes longer. And the Mac also has gotten lighter, longer battery, and just more of, it's the hardware is more of a delight to use since that time. So I think it's in a weird spot. Then, so we say all that to say, then you add in Vision Pro. And so if I'm even thinking like, what is it? Will Vision Pro upend the iPad's ability to be a cool consumption device? Because the iPad is inherently a single user device. Like if I watch a movie on it, I'm watching it by myself. It's just the way you would the Vision Pro. So like, I'm a little concerned about the iPad going forward. Certainly if we get like foldable displays on the iPhone, like if you could get to a place where the iPhone can be maybe as big as an iPhone mini or iPad mini, but then it can fold down for your pocket in like some magical world. I think the iPad's in a weird spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It always, I want to go back to what you said earlier about, you know, its usefulness as a device for creation. Right. And, you know, we didn't get the pencil. It was like 5 years, right, before the pencil came. And text editing on an iPad is still a little frustrating. I have the keyboard that folds around. I think it's the Smart Folio one, not the one with the hinge, but the one that just flips around. And I like it. I can type pretty fast on it. It works great. But anytime I need to go back and edit a paragraph or like move a sentence around or something like that, I really find a lot of friction in the touch interface for selecting text and moving it around. And the trackpad or, you know, keyboard and mouse interface is just better for that. Whether it's the newer keyboard with the little pointer or a Mac, certainly it's just better. And that I think is what has held it back a little bit in education. So a lot of education is centered around creating documents as the work output of a student, a report, a book report, essay, standardized testing, you know, falls in that same category. And I frankly, a Chromebook with a built-in keyboard does a better job of text editing and creating documents, aside from the integration with Google Workspace and all of that.
Yeah. So we think back to the original release, and I think what was so cool about it is it could have easily been $9.99 and still been a really compelling device at the time, but it came in at $4.99. And obviously there was a lot of jokes leading up to about the name iPad. Obviously now it's just, you know, we don't even think about that, but like that was like kind of a controversial name. But, you know, the $4.99 price point, it made it this really attractive device in education because, again, at the time you had Macs, you know, like a MacBook on the high end, $1,000 plus for just the stock model. But then you had these netbooks, which were garbage computers. And the iPad was like, oh, this is really cool. But then Chromebooks came around and Google, you know, Workspace, then Google Apps, your domain, ended up becoming G Suite. That became very integrated into education. So you had this like low cost iPad, $4.99, which was really good, really great device. And it evolved over the years, new versions, Retina screen, all the things. But then Google Workspace was getting its hold in education because it was free. It's still free. And it's a fantastic service from a it just works standpoint. And then Chromebooks came along and they, like you said, they were pretty good devices. Like they can be low cost, but Chrome OS was really lightweight, really, really fast. Like the hardware's good enough. It's kind of a disposable device. Like you can type on it. It saves in 2 seconds. You can throw it in the garbage, pick another one, pick up, sign back in, your stuff's right where. Like that was a nice experience. And Apple to this day has never been able to get to that experience in education. Like the Chrome OS, you know, ecosystem is pretty good. Like I know my son in his middle school, they use Chromebooks in the middle school, then they kind of graduate to Macs in the high school and they only use the iPad a little bit in education in elementary. And so it's kind of the same thing. Like Chromebooks got better at the things. I mean, again, for a drawing and collaboration standpoint, yeah, I would say the iPad's easier, taking photos and manipulating them easier on the iPad. Yeah. But education is still largely, as you mentioned, revolved around this, like we create content, creating documents, presentations, et cetera. Just as the same way we do in the workplace, Chromebooks were pretty good at that. And they had a really good price point and you could get a bunch of different kinds. There are a lot of them that are very repairable. Apple the iPad is just still in a weird spot in education where it's not that it's a bad device, but like there are things about Chromebooks that are very attractive to schools, and it's a lot of it's built around just the deep integration with Google Workspace. And again, you know, iTunes U was around this time, like, you know, they got iWork in the cloud, all these things were happening. And like Google just, in some ways, I think over the years told a nicer story in education, and it was easier. Obviously, you know, kind of going through the history, a couple years after the introduction, you know, Apple Configurator came out, and that became just like a way to kind of deploy iPads, particularly in schools and Macs. This is kind of the time period when MDM was really cranking up, and this many of these things you just do over an MDM in the cloud in the future. But like, and I give Apple a lot of credit too, because a lot of this, particularly in education, a lot of the workflows that we enjoy today with Apple School Manager, the ability to deploy apps over the air, device-based app assignment was a big one. Like a lot of these things, like, Apple was building this stuff on the fly. Like customers were kind of like shoehorning the iPad into new use cases in education. And then it's like Apple just didn't really have the infrastructure for a, you know, a 10,000 school, 10,000 iPad school. Like this was hard. And they built a lot of these workflows over the fly. MDM vendors built really, really quickly. Again, I think for me, one of the biggest one was device-based app assignment, where you could deploy an app to an iPad and have it not be tied to an Apple ID. It was tied to a device. And so like when that year Apple shipped that ability to like push it out, not tie it to an Apple ID and then pull it back, that was like a critical workflow. But again, a lot of these things were being built on the fly. And again, like, so you just run through that entire decade and the iPad, you know, shifts a little bit in terms of hardware. Like they get the mini, but then they get the Pro and you got all these things. And so like this is, I think for me, where the iPad get into a weird spot, because it was pitched, it originally came out as this, like, it was like, hey, this is half the price of a Mac, but it's still really good in education. Well, then you kind of get to this Pro lineup. And again, I know we're glossing over years, but for the sake of brevity, you get this iPad Pro with like the pencil and the keyboard and all this. And it's like, oh, it makes it into a really good Mac. But by the time you spend that kind of money, you could have just bought a really good Mac.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a bit perplexing. I do think there's places where the iPad does work well. So like, you know, just starting from education and moving forward, I think if you're asking your students to demonstrate learning through some more creative means, like, you know, produce a mock newscast that explains the topic that you're studying and film that with your co-host and have graphics and slides and other things as part of a multimedia presentation, the iPad is a better device for that. You know, the built-in camera and video recording and the other things that you can do, the apps that are available to create a multimedia presentation, they're better on iPad. There's other use cases as well that are just better. If you wanted to record a podcast as an example of what you've learned, right, that's easier to do on iPad, especially today with tools like Ferrite and other things that are available. It's just gotten better and better. But if you're stuck in that document-based or document-centric view of what the output should be, it has a hard time proving its superiority or its advantage in other cases. But moving ahead, right, to business and where it works there, I do find it a useful device. I travel with it alongside of my Mac. And the reason why I pull it out is because, actually, this is funny. I just had a conversation yesterday with a colleague. We're in the cab, Uber, going to the airport, and we'd been working on a project, and I pulled out my iPad and started writing out some notes about the project we were working on, and he just asked me, like, why your iPad? And for me, there is less friction in opening my iPad and jotting down a note or writing an idea or looking something up than there is with opening my Mac. Part of it is just the lightness of the interface, you know, no toolbar, no other notifications. Well, there are notifications, but you know what I mean? No things, no badges in the toolbar that need my attention, no background processes that are taking CPU or network bandwidth or whatever. Mm-hmm. I just get right to what I want to do and I can get it done. The other thing that's really critical for me is the 5G networking. So the ability to open that device and get to a lot of the SaaS applications that I use, to get to a lot of business tools I use, to be able to write something down and know that I'm connected to the internet. That's something that I can't do with my Mac in the back of an Uber on my way to the airport.
Yeah, that's fair. And we still don't have Macs with built-in cellular. And that's a very fair point about that. There is a lot of friction with opening your Mac. It's kind of like, what's going to barrage me when I open this thing? And there is a likeness to the iPad. And again, that's where I go back to, in some ways, that $499 price point and that device may have been like the perfect one, where it was like, we're not trying to make this be a Mac. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was what it was. And certainly like there's a ton of use cases around point of sale systems, kiosks for, you know, museums and office, but like there's tons of like very unique use cases that are still like you're not using a Mac for that. You're not using a phone for that. Another one to get to mention is Coach's Eye. We're like, you know, this is an incredible tool for coaches to be able to record athletes and mark up what they're doing and share it. Like these are all incredible tools. And I think the thing I've always try to communicate to people is like, don't try to make the iPad a Mac, just like you're not trying to make the Mac an iPad. Like if you have room for the iPad in your life, like just let it be for the best use cases for the iPad, and then not try to, and don't use it in ways that are going to be frustrate you for the sake of using an iPad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that sort of positions it in that space where it is, you know, it's a nice to have, not a must have. And, you know, going back to the analogy about cars and trucks, right? I mean, this is a very like US-centric view, an American view on things. But, you know, there's a reason the Ford F-150 is the best-selling car in the United States. Like, sure, like a smaller car might be a little more practical and get better gas mileage and be lower maintenance and all of that, right? But there's a reason that people still buy trucks. And I think it's, I kind of have that same feeling about my Mac, that I just don't feel like I can let it go. Like I need it. You know, if I'm doing work in Visual Studio Code or I'm even working at GitHub or something, it's a lot easier to do that on my Mac. And so that for me is the must-have device, and the iPad is the nice-to-have.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way to put it. And it's okay to make this a nice to have. Just in some ways is the Apple Watch is a nice to have. Vision Pro is a nice to have. Like it doesn't have to be this like everybody must have it. I do think like leveraging those devices and finding out like what leveraging to their full potential is the key. In just the same way, like you're not trying to make your phone into a Mac, like don't try to make the iPad into a Mac. Do you think, so again, we've just gone through a quick history. You've got, you know, over the years, you know, we continue to have the quote unquote iPad, and today it kind of fits that low cost model. And again, you can get these things for $329. It's a fantastic device. Like that $329 iPad is so fantastic. You get the mini, which again, this is awkward years. Like, you know, seemed like it was waning for years and years and years, and they released a new one. It's really good. You get the iPad on the Pro line. Some, you know, the hardware is just incredible. I would still argue the software is lagging behind a little bit, but Apple's in a tough spot of trying to keep it still simple, but then trying to make iPad OS like, you know, a great thing. Mm-hmm. Do you think like should Apple have made I'm just going to ask a simple question. Like, should Apple have made a Chromebook at some point instead and just said like, this is a really, particularly with Apple Silicon, like, is there an opportunity for Apple to make an M1 Safari book that is web only? And again, targeted at education businesses that use SaaS only, like, you know, $499. Is there room for that?
This episode of Apple at Work is sponsored by Collide. When you go through airport security, there's one line where the TSA agent checks your ID, and another line where a machine scans your bag. The same thing happens in enterprise security, but instead of passengers and luggage, it's end users and their devices. These days, most companies are pretty good at the first part of the equation, where they check the identity. But user devices can roll through authentication without getting inspected at all. In fact, 47% of companies allow unmanaged, untrusted devices to access their data. This means an employee can log in from a laptop that has a firewall turned off, hasn't been updated in 6 months, or worse, that laptop might belong to a bad actor using employee credentials. Collide finally solves the device trust problem. Collide ensures that no device can log into your Okta-protected apps unless it passes your security checks. Plus, you can use Collide on devices without MDM, like your Linux fleet, contractor devices, and every BYOD phone and laptop in your company. Visit collide.com/appleatwork to watch a demo and see how it works. That's collide.com/appleatwork.
You know, I'm skeptical, to be honest. I think the value of the Chromebook is in the Google Workspace ecosystem. And, you know, as much as I appreciate and enjoy using Apple devices and their services, you know, iCloud is just simple, and iCloud Drive and all that. It is not a replacement for Google Workspace. And if I'm in business or if I'm in education, it's just not going to get it done. And if that's my back end, you know, if it's Google Workspace or if it's Microsoft Office, either one, like there's other devices that I think are going to work in that ecosystem better. So I think Apple is wise, right? This is where my skepticism comes in. I think Apple is wise to stick to their guns and say, hey, this is the kind of device that we make. It provides a really nice experience, a premium experience with premium hardware. This is what it does. And we're not trying to compete directly against these low cost, netbook-like, Chromebook-like devices that all they do is connect to web services. It's just not what we do. And I think that's better. I think, you know, the quote I'm thinking of is, you know, 1,000 no's for every yes. I think Apple's strength is in their focus and their ability to say no to things and just do the few things that they do and do those very well. I think it'd be a distraction at this point.
I don't disagree with you. I think there's this tendency for many businesses to, if there's like a need for a customer not being met, or like at a price point, like, oh, we have to offer something like that. So like, you know, oh, this school bought Chromebooks instead of the iPad or instead of the Mac, and say, oh, we could offer something. It's like, maybe it's not in Apple's DNA to compete on kind of throwaway turnkey, like web laptops. And it's okay to say that's not in Apple's DNA. That's not what they do best. Apple, I mean, it's sort of like a high-end car manufacturer is not trying to compete with a low-end car manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And just because they may lose sales to the lowest-end car manufacturer, like that doesn't mean we're going to try to compete with that. We're just going to focus on building what, like the people who want the Apple ecosystem, like we're going to focus on building the best of that. Because I would argue probably doing that today is probably like the equivalent of like the clones in the 90s. It's like, okay, we got to, you know, and you just end up spreading yourself thin. And again, like there are devices today. A good example is the Kindle. Like, I think Apple could make a really, really good e-book reader. Like, I think they could do that better than anybody. Mm-hmm. But that's not in their vision. That's not what they want to do. And same way, they didn't compete. Like, the Apple TV and the Fire Stick, you could argue they're competitors, but they're not. Like, mm-hmm. Fire Stick's competing against Roku and the other low-cost, you know, devices here, like the $20 streaming sticks. Like, Apple's not trying to compete against that. And it's okay to say, hey, if you're wanting a $20 TV streaming stick, Apple TV is not your device. And that's okay. Yeah. And it's okay as long as there are enough customers buying the high end. I would have thought over the years, as the low-end computers got better, that like more people would gravitate towards these. But then I continue to be amazed with the Mac sales are not what they were a few years ago, but like the Mac is still this premium device and it's stayed premium. And even on the iPad, like there are always cheaper tablets. If you want a tablet, the iPad is still the best tablet. And, you know, I think I even mentioned, did I mention on the past show about my buying an iPod?
Yeah.
So here it is. So
a refurbished one.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So, like, I, you know, well, not on video. So, if you're listening to the audio, you can't hear it. And one of the things that like struck me is, so I bought every like generic MP3 player on Amazon you could find. Mm-hmm. Like, there's countless out there. Some that even look like the iPod. And I even thought, well, surely over this time, people have like made a better MP3 player. And what I found out is they're all garbage. And it wasn't even like the interfaces of the actual devices were that bad, but the experience of getting my music onto those devices was so bad. And it would have the right tag on my computer, but it wouldn't, like, it would be rent underscores on the devices. And then getting an iPod that was very, very old and going through that experience of like syncing and getting this stuff. And it was like, Apple is still the best. Like, this is actually why the iPod was successful, because even in 2024, no one has replicated that. Mm-hmm. And I would argue there are still things around being an Apple customer. Like, if you're the iPhone, iPad, and Mac user in the business, the seamless experience of like all these things working together, I would argue, is still the best experience, not the cheapest experience. It's still the best device experience on the whole ecosystem that no one else to this day can touch. And as long as Apple stays focused on that experience for the people that want the Apple experience, and like making sure like this stuff syncs, it works. It's continuity is a great example. Like, these things working together, that's Apple's bread and butter, not competing on the low end with Chromebooks.
Yeah. There's an interesting tension there, right? Where the iPod is a single purpose device. It does one thing. It plays music, right? That's all it does. And it's really, really good at it. And so, you know, we all enjoyed them, right? And they did really well. You could see in the sales numbers, right? That lots of people shared that opinion that iPod was a great device. But Apple doesn't have a single purpose device anymore. I think there's something there, I think, about the iPad, where because of the app ecosystem, because of the fact that developers can add functionality to the iPad, and it takes over the screen and it becomes whatever you want it to be or need it to be at that moment, it is kind of a nice middle ground between a computer that is just inherently multi-applications, multi-windows, all of that, and an iPod that's just plays music and does one thing. The iPad can be a music player or a movie player or an e-reader. And when you launch that app, it takes over the screen and it functions like a single purpose device, but it has the flexibility to be different. So my purpose might be different than yours, and we can choose different apps and use it that way. And so I think part of my experience with using iPad is really finding the few things, the handful of things that I want to use it for, and getting rid of the rest, right? And I still pick it up because it is a nice experience for those few things that I like to use it for.
I think that, you could go buy the $329 iPad today for that, hey, I want it for four different tasks in my life. Mm-hmm. You go buy that $329 iPad and you could use it for like 5 years today. And I would argue, like, if I need to read a PDF, like reading that on a Mac or my phone is still garbage. Like, reading a long PDF is still a much better experience on an iPad. If you need to mark up, provide feedback.
With the pencil, it's great. Yeah.
And again, that's where I know the iPad Pro kind of like, oh, is it the Pro? If I'm a business user, I got to have the Pro. It's like, you actually probably don't. Like, you probably, that low cost iPad is probably the iPad for everybody. And you only should go to the Pro if you're like, are struggling to use, the regular iPad. And so in some ways, if I take the Pro out of my head, it has a nice story. It's not the device for everything, just as like neither is the phone, but there are some things it does better than any device in Apple's lineup. And as long as there are things that it does better that customers still want to do, it makes sense for Apple to keep building on it. Where I think probably us in the tech community have evolved over the past couple of years is nobody's now no longer thinking this is going to replace the Mac. Like, this is not going to become the default computing work device in the coming years, but it still fits a nice need, just as like the Apple Watch still fits a need. It's not, it's not replaced the phone, but there are things the Apple Watch does very nicely. So wrap it up for me. It's the iPad is not in the place in 2024 I thought it would be, but there is still a lot of reasons for Apple to keep building on the iPad. I think it just really highlights how great Apple's hardware is, that the $329 iPad can do what it can do.
Yeah, I think it's been curious that, it hasn't been updated at all in this last year. The hardware's remained the same. And so I expect maybe we'll see some new hardware soon. I'd be shocked if Apple went a whole nother year without updating the hardware. Of course, I don't know either way, but I'm expecting to see something new. And it'll be interesting to see if Apple has a new direction in mind for iPad or if it just continues to stay the course. It has a place for me the way it is. My current iPad is a couple years old, and I don't feel a compelling need to change anything about it. And it'll be interesting to see if Apple kind of shows me a reason why I would be interested in something new.
So that's a great way to look at it. Again, iPad is a great device. It is. The key thing I want to say as we wrap up is find the things that your devices do. And if you like, you know, and don't even think like, I've got to have all of them. If there's a place you're like, okay, like let's say you're on the phone Mac train, you're like, gosh, I am reading a lot of documents. I would love to go just even put my feet up in my office and use a pencil and then mark these up, provide feedback. Again, you're not probably going to buy a new iPad every year for that, but like you can buy an iPad today and use it for many years. And it's just going to be a really nice experience. And the cool thing is, from a business point of view, the management's just fantastic. Like from an IT admin, you can deploy iPads en masse, and that whole entire ecosystem of workflows is just rock solid, and it's there.
Yeah, perfect.
So, all right, we'll wrap it up there. Weldon, thanks for coming on the show. This has been a fun series. We're kind of looking through the history of the iPad, Mac, and iPhone. Hey, who knows, in 20 years we may be doing this for the Vision Pro, and we can even say we remember when the first one launched. But thanks, everybody, for listening.